The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly. From Hugo Lloris to Klopp's Dortmund, it's been a bad week for headbangers and for Germany's industrial heartland as Chelsea shake up Schalke and call them Ruhr Gunners. Arsenal's Arsenal due for Dortmund. Next up, though, Arsenal must face a Manchester United side who won't go down without a fight, except in Ashley Young's case. What will happen? And if they don't believe in them after that, will they ever believe them? There's all the news from midweek. Chelsea looking eto-fabulous. Sid on Spain. Juventus-Napoli. And a full roundup of the weekend's action in the Premier League 2 with Spurs, Newcastle, Sunderland, Man City and Norwich, West Ham. We are should Chris Hughton be managing the club shop? He sent that many visitors home happy. That and much more in today's Football Weekly Extra. Hi, listeners. How are you? Hope you're well. We are too. Apologies, really, for our recent offering, which Monday's pod. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hello, veteran of our trip to Swansea.
Yeah, we just got back.
We just got back. It was kind of our Jesus and Mary Chain tribute pod. It showed up 2 days late and then was massively distorted when it did eventually play. 23 Kid calling it the worst visit to Wales since Jonah, which I think probably sums it up. But anyway, we're back on track now, back in comfy near-Earth orbit with a stellar lineup with Barry Glendenning.
Hello. Yeah. Yes.
And Ian McIntosh, nice to see you.
Hello.
Hi. He always sounds so cheery, doesn't he, Paul?
He does. I'm not going to be able to match that.
No? All right, then. Well, you need a bit of light and shade, don't you?
You do. Chiaroscuro.
Exactly.
O'Neill Keane.
Very much so. Hey, let's talk about that a little bit later on. But let's begin. A lot of people accuse us of being Arsenal-centric here, but you have to really doff your cap to Arsene Wenger's men and the terrific job they did away in Dortmund.
Well, absolutely. And as a confirmed arso-sceptic, I'm finding this almost disconcerting because in the space of 5 days, we've seen Arsenal take down Liverpool by shutting down their midfield completely and then annihilating them when they attack. And we've also seen them on the back foot against Borussia Dortmund, one of the best sides in Europe, where, I mean, I think their goal was their first actual serious attempt. They almost doubled the advantage seconds later, but either side of that, for the remainder of the game, they were backs pressed firmly against the wall. I don't think I've ever seen Per Mertesacker play that well. It was it's a phenomenal and very versatile display of attributes from Arsenal in such a short space of time, and it's ruining everybody's anti-Arsenal arguments.
Mm. I love that kind of spinning scissor kick volley clearance thing that he did at one point. Well, it wasn't really a clearance, but it was amazing.
It's like when he's like one of those artist dummies, you know, the ones with the joints that you can move and pose and kind of just looks inelegant, but it's effective, as yep. It is in the studio. What also seems with Arsenal is that there's a tactical variation as well. And those two games you talk about, they've shifted. They played different tactics within those two games, and both of those games are different from the high, intricate passing in the opposition half game that we're kind of accustomed to from Arsenal, the not entirely effective version.
Yeah, they looked canny this time around. Well, canny Arsenal.
Well, canny and strong. Yeah. And those are just two things you don't traditionally say about them.
Also, and this is the really befuddling thing, they did it without Flamini.
Yeah, everyone else in that midfield is stepping up. On Saturday, Mikel Arteta was absolutely superb. Last night, he rode his luck a little bit with the referee. He could easily have been sent off. But between him and Thomas Rosicky, who is crunching into tackles at the moment, they're doing their level best to fill the gap left by Flamini and Wilshere, of course, who loves a tackle.
And you've got to remember with Flamini that he was originally one of these people who was a bit too milky and didn't look like he was capable of playing that defensive enforcer role, and eventually he grew into it, and I think you're seeing the same thing happening.
Barry?
Everyone thought this was going to be a defining part of Arsenal's season. They had Chelsea in the League Cup, they lost. They've beaten Liverpool, beaten Dortmund away, and Manchester United now on Sunday. So they're stating their credentials very emphatically. Although some people seem to be of the opinion that no matter who they beat, they still haven't proved themselves. So it's difficult to know what exactly they have to do to prove themselves as genuine contenders, either in Europe or in the Premier League.
Confusing times to be a pundit.
Well, you do it for two-thirds of a season rather than the first quarter.
Right.
It's quite. I mean... it's interesting listening to Gary. You know, Gary Neville obviously feels that he's changed his mind as opposed to the Match of the Day pundits who haven't. The fears that people have about this Arsenal thing that, you know, there's either an injury in centre forward or centre half hasn't happened. So I think until that does happen, we're not really going to know their prospects across the course of the season. Whereas you're seeing with City and Chelsea already that they have these massive squads that are entirely capable of rotating.
You mentioned centre forward. I'm still thick enough to think that the Podolski injury, I mean, he's been out for how long now? Qualifies in some regard.
Yeah, he's been out for most of the season, hasn't he?
But in the Champions League, anyway, Napoli beating Marseille, they went behind and then 2 goals in 2 minutes and Higuain playing a blinder. But it was pretty much the expected result, 3-2 for the Neapolitans. That makes that group look very interesting because Arsenal and Napoli both on 9 points. Then Borussia Dortmund in third, at risk. They host Napoli next time out. And then it's Napoli, Arsenal at the end. What a group.
Yeah, and it's amazing with the coefficients. Marseille were actually the second seed and looked likely to finish with no points at all, making it very complicated for everybody.
I was just saying to Ian before we came in to record this that there's been so much Jurgen Klopp love in the build-up in recent weeks because Borussia Dortmund invited a group of English journalists out to speak to him. I think it was last week. I wasn't among those invited. but when the backlash and the inevitable backlash against Klopp begins, it will be a time of great fury, I suspect.
Remember it happened to Ian Holloway. It really didn't take very long, did it? It was about 3 weeks of Holloway being in the Premier League before everyone tired of that shtick.
Are you suggesting Klopp's basically in Holloway with a chunkier physique and better glasses?
It's also great to see that the British media can now build up and knock down people across the globe.
Right.
It's a great thing about the internet.
Certainly is. Anyway, what does this mean for the weekend? Because I'm looking at the figures and they suggest that Man United have won their last four in the Premier League and they're undefeated in eight in all competitions. But they seem to be back, Paul.
They're not back.
No.
But they are in playing well in patches and they have... When they have Rooney and Van Persie in the team, they have, you know, an effective cutting edge. But you saw against Sociedad that they didn't really play very well. But they were reasonably, they were compact and held their shape and functional. And then there was about a 10-minute period when Moyes made a couple of substitutions, moved Kagawa into the centre, that they started cutting through Sociedad with ease, got the penalty, missed it, and the pendulum swung again.
Ooh.
But I think you are seeing in patches and in certain combinations, United starting to look effective, but not consistently over the course of 90
minutes.
What was
your feeling then when they host this rampant gunner side?
I kind of think football gods being football gods, it might just be a come down for Arsenal. But
really?
Yeah, but for no other reason than it would seem to be the opposite of what form would suggest.
Well, I'm not sure if I can go along with that, Ian.
I think I can, actually.
I
can see, you know, United with home advantage and looking a little more solid and a little more confident. And all they're going through at the moment is what they're supposed to go through. There's been this wide disparity between, I think, mainly Manchester United fans who can remember a time before Ferguson when they didn't always finish in the top two or three.
Yeah.
And therefore have a more realistic idea of what will happen when you change a manager after such a vast expanse of time. But United, yeah, the squad hasn't got noticeably worse. They were always going to be a little bit different and a little bit unsettled by Ferguson leaving. So this was always going to happen. They're still a very, very good team playing at home against an Arsenal side coming back from Germany.
I'm not sure. Did they not really, really struggle to get past Sunderland at home and get past Stoke at home and indeed lose at home to West Brom already this season?
But they're starting to do it now. They're starting to get that belief that it's not a lost cause, particularly against Stoke. That was a little flash of old Manchester United.
Yeah, against Stoke.
But it's not going to vanish. This mentality is going to dim a little bit, obviously, but it's not going to vanish. They're still a very, very good squad.
And, you know, Barry?
Well, Michael Cox, through the medium of circles being moved around a green rectangle, he arrived at the conclusion after their win that the players are finally coming around to David Moyes' way of thinking, you know, and particularly the wingers, although Ashley Young's dive might not be specifically part of David Moyes' way of thinking. It's natural that the players aren't going to try as hard as they used to under Ferguson. They're probably not as afraid of Moyes. They're probably not as respectful of him because he hasn't achieved much in the game compared to them and their former manager. But yeah, they're doing okay.
All right, well, thanks for that. On the subject of Man United's wingers, though, clever people who look at heat maps point out that when you see Arsenal's average position this season, they're pretty much queuing up down the middle. It's almost like a line of players. And as such, Man United's wide men could be key, Paul.
Oh, I mean, they could have more space to play in. I think you'll also see, quite likely to see, United playing aggressive and closing down that middle that spaces and trying to disrupt Arsenal, even though they're the home team.
Who will be doing that then for United?
Well, I mean, I imagine it'll be
Carrick?
You could see Fellaini and Jones maybe playing in the centre together.
Really?
That. You could do. I mean, you know, who knows? They have a couple of combinations. Cleverly is, you know, gets around the pitch in that area. That's not his strongest suit. They're not, you know, central midfield is not their strongest part, but disrupting Arsenal is something that's worked effectively for Ferguson over the past half a dozen years. Mm. Not asserting their own game, but denying Arsenal's game, and then Arsenal have traditionally not known what to do.
All right. Well, you all reckon United are going to do it, so I stand corrected.
Fellaini's quite a concern. If I was a Manchester United fan, I'd wonder what's happened to him. He's unrecognisable from the force he was at Everton. Got sent off the other night and just looks hopelessly out of his depth.
It's only 2 months into a new club. It's the same with Moyes taking over United. It's 2 months into a complete change of guard. These things are going to take time to settle down.
In fairness, I think he won himself a lot of favour with the Manchester United fans with the way he waded in to protect Januzaj. When Januzaj had been kicked hard up the bottom and then stamped on the back of the calf. He was straight in there picking that up. I think that will actually buy him another couple of months.
Right. It won't buy you any points, though, Ian.
No.
Producer Ben points out that he does actually have a twin brother, so...
Ooh.
Right. Hey, Man City. This is historic. They're through to the knockout stages of the Champions League. How about that? Those citizens, Paul?
Yeah, they brought in Pellegrini to help effect an improvement in that Champions
League. He's only been there 2 months and he's already had a...
Good point. Good point. Well made. Although you'd say that the roots aren't set as deep at City.
Right.
But he's obviously worked immediately on this striking partnership. He knows who his first two strikers are, and they're playing brilliantly together.
Certainly are. 5-2 against CSKA. Very impressive. They always are at home, though, aren't they?
Yeah, and they face a stern test on Sunday, though.
Yeah, exactly. Let's hear about that stern test, Barry.
Well, they're playing Sunderland.
Right.
And we'll probably win, but they're not brilliant on the road, are they?
No. No, they're not.
And then again, Sunderland aren't brilliant anywhere. But they are going into this match on the back of one consecutive win over Southampton in the League Cup.
Exactly. Which you predicted would happen with your money. You put your money where your mouth was.
I did, yeah, but only when I saw the teams. And Pochettino made 10 changes from the weekend and put out a lot of very young and inexperienced players, so I thought Sunderland would have their measure. And they were a good price, actually. They were nearly...
It's interesting, though. So both teams coming into this off the back of big midweek results. Man City have lost their last three visits to the Stadium of Light. Stroking my chin.
I was there for two of them.
Were you?
Yeah, late goals. Joe Hart beaten at the near post, I think, last time round.
Right.
Of course, whether or not he'll be playing is another matter entirely. I don't think Pantilimon did enough to preserve his place against Saska. There was one occasion when he came just wading out of his six-yard box like a furious daddy long legs, just all limbs swirling, trying to rip the ball out of the air, and then promptly fell over. He wasn't helped by a defence that never looks comfortable without Vincent Kompany. It was a strange game, really, because Manchester City were so sharp up front and soft as warm cheese at the back, and that Saska probably could have scored more than three. They could have conceded more than five, of course. But I wouldn't entirely want to rule out Sunderland, as awful as they are, of picking anything up there.
Warm cheese. Yeah, don't you think about warm cheese? I wonder about, do you think then, if Pantilimon isn't up to snuff, which he might not be, do you think he's served enough of a fillip to Hart to just bring him back in the team, or do you think that they need to go out and buy a keeper like they were going to try and buy
Begovic? Yeah, they've got to go third choice, I reckon.
Well, yeah, there is some suggestion that they're after Pellegrini's old Malaga keeper.
Yeah.
The delightfully named Willy, who was phenomenal against Real Madrid a couple of weeks ago.
Mm.
It was the equivalent of covering your goal in cling film. It just couldn't seem to get past him until right at the end. But I think Joe Hart will probably be back for this. Because Pantilimon, he's not had the best two games. Firstly, in the fact that Norwich, I think, mustered one shot in the entirety of their thrashing. And then Saska, obviously, didn't bring out the best in him either. I think maybe he served his purpose, giving Joe a slap across the nose.
Well, James Muriel tweets in to say, has any keeper really recovered the number one after being dropped for poor form? And he mentions Robinson, Carson and Kirkland. The example that who kind of auto-citated himself was David De Gea, who said that he was dropped by Sir Alex Ferguson, and he felt that that was almost the making of him.
Yeah, I think the two of them were brought in at the same time, weren't they? De Gea and Lindegaard. And there was the idea that in that first season that they would be challenging each other, always with the suspicion that De Gea would be the ultimate number one. So maybe that was factored in. There must be occasions where people have
lost. I think Robillard at Liverpool in the 80s used to have the occasional skittish run where Mike Hooper would get two or three games.
And Gomez.
I've got another.
Correlio Gomez as well happened.
Chesney,
yeah.
Who was left behind when Arsenal went to Munich last year because he wasn't mentally something or other. He was just mental, said Arsene. And he's much better now, isn't he? Hmm. Much, much better.
I'm intrigued by Ian's notion that covering a goal in cling film would make it impregnable.
I use very, very powerful cling film. You have to buy it from special outlets.
But even then,
there'd be a gap at the bottom where you could, if you wrapped it properly.
I mean, it doesn't have to be just one sheet. You can really like layer it, and obviously the power and the strength comes from the way
it goes.
We should
probably have a warning for that people listening at home, though, that you shouldn't use cling film to counter impregnation. whatever Barry might say.
There's not much give in very strong cling film. I can imagine some kind of backdraft. Very, very painful backdraft.
Right. Household hints. We got them. Chelsea! 3-0 and it's all your fault. Chelsea's fans singing to Timo Hildebrand. Shame it wasn't the German fans because they would have been singing it to the tune of Moonlight Shadow, which I've always been a big fan of, from Mike Oldfield, of course.
Carry
back in the day.
Away. I am Moonlight Shadow.
Yeah, nicely done, man. Thanks for that reverb, producer Ben. Beyond the whopping goalie error, what can this match tell us?
That he's still playing mind games with his squad.
The Hazard hazard.
It sounds like this is the sort of thing that if you were coming back from the African Nations Cup, you'd be factored in another week's worth of missing playing connections and stuff, and he missed one, and he's been kind of done for his attitude. It seems like cover for the fact that he's not been particularly effective this season despite being joint top scorer. But, you know, his mind games haven't quite worked with Wan-Mata yet, and he appears to have...
Have they not?
Well,
Mata was a reformed character and has now knuckled down.
Well, he got taken off in the weekend.
Did he?
Yeah. Is he knuckled down? Is he as effective? Is he sulking? Is he what? But he hasn't quite been the player of last season, and not an automatic first choice for Chelsea.
But Mourinho's certainly done great mental work on his centre-forwards, with first Torres, who's now gone out of the pitch, but now Eto with a brace, and even Demba Ba scoring. Nice goal as well.
I think you've got to say that Samuel Eto, you know, people talk about him as if he's 35 or 36, but he's still only 32. He's the poacher supreme. Those skills are the last that are going to go for a centre-forward. He's a bargain, an absolute bargain.
We had some, it takes me back, Poacher Supreme. We had some Poacher Supreme on the Football Weekly thing. All that debate about how the best way to poach an egg, put a bit of vinegar in the water, and you did the centrifuge thing.
Yeah, I still do that.
Do you still do that, though?
The vinegar in the whirlpool works a treat.
I ended up buying those little plastic kind of, not the cups, but the floppy, the rubber things.
I consider that cheating.
I know. I'm almost asking producer Ben, chop that. Chop my rubber poaching shame.
You go home and chop it in half and never use it again. That's what you should do. You should commit to the whirlpool.
Okay.
Join us.
Yeah, the vortex.
Okay.
Join the vortex.
Samuel Eto'o as well actually has a very, very violent manner of greeting one.
You met him on the subject of his graphic novel type thing.
Yes. And when we were leaving, you know, I put my hand out to shake his hand, and he sort of drew his hand back. As you know, we were going to do a mid-air hand slap.
Right.
Which we did, and I always worry about that, because if you miss or don't connect properly, it's quite embarrassing. But we caught each other plumb, and I thought my wrist was broken. He hit me so hard.
Really?
Do you know who else does that? Who? Ramon Vega. He's got a handshake like a fully laden Stuka. It screams in from somewhere above his head, and I damn near lost a finger.
Wow. Are the great hand of pool firmest handshake you've ever?
A firmest handshake I've ever. I mean, some actors.
Hmm.
But I mean, they're just all it's all artificial. It's not necessarily representative of their character.
Right.
They just all have to go to the gym, so they've all got big handshakes.
Absolutely. Raphael Honigstein, he's got a great handshake, but we won't go into that, of course. Chelsea this weekend are hosting West Brom. How about this Berahino kid? Fantastic goal last weekend. Is there any chance with West Brom? You know, they're a bit of a spanner in the works professionally, aren't they? Any chance Chelsea are going to lose more ground here?
No. They've won their last seven matches against West Brom, and I think they've only kept clean sheets in six of them. So while West Brom may be a Jonah for some teams and managers, Chelsea are not one of them.
They were very stodgy in this fixture last season.
West Brom?
Yeah, this was the game that followed Rafa Benitez and his thinly veiled attack on the Chelsea supporters.
Right.
So everybody turned up expecting some kind of rebellion. In actual fact, the Chelsea fans pretty much ignored him. I think Demba Ba scored early. But West Brom pretty much just clung on for the whole game, just stopping Chelsea from enjoying any degree of comfort. And you wouldn't rule out that again.
Right.
They're a very, very good team, if not spectacular.
Interesting that Steve Clark, of course, the former Moo disciple and a habitué of the Stamford Bridge bench himself.
Mm. It is actually home matches Chelsea have won against West Brom. Seven on the bounce, not matches in general.
All right. But they've won 12 of 14 previous Premier League games against West Brom. So, yeah, that's quite a trend to buck. All right, well, that's that. And also on the subject of the Champions League, we should mention Celtic, who went to Amsterdam full of high hopes and with 13,000 travelling fans, some of whom got into a bit of a ruck, apparently. Some of whom got attacked the night before and then others got involved in a ruck. There was all sorts of trouble there in Amsterdam. It does sound as though other clubs sent fans to Amsterdam. I don't know if there was some kind of unofficial meet, but apparently there was there was trouble. I don't know the details. I won't get into it. But anyway, yes, they got beaten 1-0. And Fraser Forster had a great game.
Yes, he did have a great game. It was about the only Celtic player who did.
Right. Of course, you're familiar with him from his Carrow Road days.
Yeah, no, he was our keeper in our League One season. So it's not quite the same standards as Champions League. But he was very, you know, he's very agile, athletic keeper with a big physical presence who is brave. So I think kind of most of that stuff that you would look, or most of the qualities you look for in a good Premier League keeper, he's got it.
Decision making?
Yeah, I mean, decision making was fine. I mean, he was quite young when he played for us. His kicking was the problem. He gave away a last minute winner to Leeds at one point. But, you know, I don't know until you
by
regularly.
Bad kicking.
Yeah, back he just kicked it to Jermaine Bedford and Jermaine Bedford kicked it back in. Right. But I think until he plays in the Premier League consistently or in a top, you know, a top European league consistently, there's going to be a certain amount of unknown about him.
Is he England's next number one?
Well, it does appear to be that's the way the media are talking about it, don't they? Because they certainly don't appear to be that interested in John Ruddy, who is having a bad period of form himself.
Well, media get what they want. Harry is England manager, all that kind of thing. Still, some goal, though, wasn't it, that he conceded? Lasse Schön, is it?
Schön.
It was some goal, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was a great strike.
Yeah. All right, well, they're not out of it yet, Celtic. Not out of it yet. We'll look at more Champions League after this.
Hello, Football Weekly listeners. Do you remember the secret footballer? Well, he's back and he's got a brand new book. And this time, he's not alone. Players, agents, coaches and managers give you access all areas. From deal-making to playmaking, from dodgy tactics to drunken antics, they reveal the unforgettable highs and the unforgivable lows of life in professional football. To buy your copy of Tales from the Secret Footballer for just £6.50, that's 50% off the recommended retail price, head to the Guardian Bookshop at guardianbookshop.co.uk/footballtales and enter the offer code TALES, that's TALES, The offer's valid until the 24th of December.
Here's an interesting stat from Stephen Slayford, who says nationality of players starting in the Champions League this week. Biggest number was from Spain. There were 35 of them. Crikey. Brazil had 32 players starting in the Champions League this week. Germany, 27. I'm just going to run down the rest. France, 21. Argentina, 18. Italy, 15. Netherlands, 12. Belgium, 11. England, 7. Oof. Oof. Here's another stat, just to cheer English listeners up.
Seven starters. Out of four teams.
Hmm.
Wow.
Well, out of how many do we had? 16 matches. That's 32 teams.
No, I meant out of four English teams.
Yeah, but I mean beyond that.
Yeah, that just because that says something, doesn't it? We automatically assume.
What does
no
it say?
Well, it says that we don't have many English players playing in foreign leagues, and we don't assume that they would go and play in foreign leagues.
Right,
which is part of the argument about why we're not developing enough top players.
Right,
that's six tops. That's a hell of a player.
Hell of a top.
What is 32 times 11? That would be 320 plus 32, 352. Is that right?
I just got a nosebleed trying to work that
320,
out.
Is that right? 352 players started, yeah, over the Tuesdays and Wednesdays games, and only seven of them. Okay, so what's 352 divided by seven? You work that one out, listeners. It's not very much.
It's not 331.
But you know what? We're not the only, well, England not the only nation worrying about its impact on the top club competition. The Italians are scratching their heads as well. Pierluigi Pardo, the eminently followable Italian broadcaster, who points out there was only one goal scored by an Italian this week, and it was Federico Piavacari, who plays for Star Bucharest. So, lean times for our Italian cousins. So we'll just move on to Olympiacos, who beat Benfica, second in their group. PSG, well done to Olympiacos. Yeah. PSG, they only drew at home to Anderlecht. And Copenhagen beat Galatasaray. A little bit more of Mancini's Euro magic there for the Turkish side. And fantastic stuff for his opposite number. How do you pronounce it? Is it Stahl Solbakken? Stahl?
Solbakken,
anyway. That's
the bald bloke from Wolves.
Exactly.
That's how
this, I think, was a real shock to most of us at some point in this Champions League campaign, in which we realised, oh my goodness, that's the same fella from football.
Yeah, well, wasn't he at Copenhagen before?
He was. They got to the knockout stage under him.
Good we are talking a man about a man who was once dead.
Yes.
Like, for several minutes.
Really?
So anything he pulls off in life is quite an achievement, even if it's just
cool.
Relegating Wolves from the championship.
How did this dead thing happen?
He had a heart attack.
Really?
Yeah.
And he was clinically dead for...
He was, a few minutes. I can't remember the exact details, but, you know, long enough.
Right.
They didn't have him lying in state in a coffin or anything.
No, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think someone had to get the defib paddles out and...
Something he shares with Billy Idol, who I believe has technically died twice.
Really? Mm. And Dave Gahan out of Depeche Mode.
Yes.
And, of course, Barry numerous times on stage.
Didn't Nicky Six from Motley Crue...
Probably.
He's died several times.
Right. And, Jack Bauer.
I've yet to see an episode of 24.
Right. When you watch one, Barry, you'll have to see them all. It's like that. Anyway, so yeah, amazing stuff. And it just goes to show we write people off with our cheap, lazy stereotypes. And there's a little bit more to the picture than meets the eye.
There is.
Anything else? Copenhagen? No?
Wonderful, wonderful.
Well, also in Copenhagen and Galatasaray's group are Juventus and Real Madrid, who met each other at the Juventus Arena on Tuesday night. Well, this was a bit of a storm of this. Let's dial up Sid to get the Spanish perspective on it. The Italians, after what's been a sticky start to this campaign from the old lady, were pretty impressed by the way they came back from 2-1 down. Hey, that sounds like Spain's Sid Lowe. Hi, Sid.
Hello, Jimbo. How you doing?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Very well. You're on a train, aren't you?
Yes, right.
Oh, no. All right. All right. We'll see what we can get out of this experience then. And first off, Spanish reaction to Real's 2-2 draw at the Juventus Arena.
Well, the reaction really is focused on Bale and Ronaldo again. There's an awful lot of excitement now because of how well they're playing, because of how many goals they're scoring, and I think that's tempered with with the kind of the doubts about the goals they're conceding. Because bear in mind, it's 3-2-2 in the last three games, although they've scored a whole load as well. But really, it's focusing on Bale.
Right. Oh, Sid, no. Because Ancelotti received a lot of stick in the papers, I saw, after the derby last weekend, which they narrowly won against Rayo Vallecano. Was this draw seen as enough for him?
No.
I think he said... Did he say no? I'm going with no.
Is Sid in Swansea?
Yeah. Sid, I think we've lost you. All right, we might try and come back to Sid later on, listeners. He's on the line somewhere. Lord knows where he's going to. But anyway, certainly from the Italian perspective, they were quite happy with that. Although, Juve, bottom of the group. Bottom of the group! With 3 points, and Copenhagen and Galatasaray have each got four. Real Madrid steaming on. So anyway, Juve next up will host Copenhagen. They win that, and then it's all down to Galatasaray at the end.
You would still fancy Juve to go through, though.
I would, yeah. I would. Pogba, he looked great. I don't know if any of you saw this game. Pogba, he really did look good in this game. And I think it was impressive the way that they came back into it. Llorente scoring, and then the Vidal penalty early on. It was a slightly soft penalty, but yeah, against an impressive-looking Real side. Anyway, there you go. I wanted to ask Sid about Atletico Madrid. Only two sides have got a perfect record in the Champions League this season. One is Bayern Munich, the other is Atleti. Sid!
Hello, James. This is going to go well, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, yeah, it sounds much better now. How about Atletico Madrid?
Can I say woof?
Please do.
Because woof, I mean, they're just brilliant, and they're so clear in what they want to do. They're so well organised. They're absolutely relentless in the way they go for teams as well. I think they've mixed up the game a lot this year. They're not just a counter attacking side, and I think that if the draw is kind, they're going to score very.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say as well. Because you know, they've had great early starts to season before, but at what stage do we start to take them seriously, Sid?
Oh, hello. Yeah. You're back again.
Yeah, yeah.
Should we take them seriously? Yeah, yeah. We should. I mean, look, take them seriously, not least because in two-legged games, when it's not a question of strength and depth in their squad, which is, I think, what would fundamentally probably mean they don't win La Liga, then I think they're a match for virtually anyone. And obviously, having won the group, which they already have, their first team in Europe to confirm first place, they should, in theory at least, get a comfortable-ish draw in the next round.
Brilliant. Okay, Barcelona ending their, Leo Messi's scoring drought with a nice little game against Milan, although what a dive from Neymar.
Yeah, I haven't seen a good enough replay yet, but it looks to me like a dive. The thing about Torreón is no one seemed to really complain, which normally suggests it's not much of a dive, but certainly in the replay I've seen and live, it looked like a bit of a dive to me, yeah.
All right, okay, what's coming up this weekend, Sid?
Well, the one I really like the look of is Villarreal Atletico Madrid, fourth against second, and they're both playing really nice football in very different ways. So that could be pretty exciting.
Well, it certainly could. Where are you on a train to and from?
Well, I'm coming back from Barcelona from the Milan game last night, back to Madrid.
Right, okay. And what was the atmosphere like then? Is it frosty in some parts of the stadium, notably between Galliani and that Barbara Berlusconi, no?
Yeah, very, very frosty. You can imagine the Italian journalists sitting around us were quite excited about that. I'll tell you what I thought. I mean, in a way, I'm sort of glad you asked about the atmosphere. 5 minutes to go, two clubs between them, we've got 11 European Cups, a 98,000 stadium, and it was dead.
Really?
There was just no build-up, no excitement, no noise. It was really quite weird, and it was sort of a little bit depressing in a way, because a game like that should be really exciting and should be really big, and it just didn't feel like there was any build-up. Obviously, it got a bit better during the game itself, but even then it wasn't, I don't know, it kind of didn't feel like the occasion. Maybe they've seen too much of each other, these two teams. Maybe it's just not that exciting anymore.
They've played each other a huge amount, but I imagine that... Milan maybe did whip up the excitement a little bit, because the second half they were really going for it, were they not, after Balotelli
Once Balotelli came on, yeah. I mean, for what it's worth, you still look at the shot count, and I think it's something like shots on target 7-1 to Barcelona. So it's not like Milan suddenly created loads of chances or anything, and Barcelona were, apart from a 20-minute spell, but I didn't think Barcelona were their best either, and I didn't think Leo Messi was at his best. And bear in mind that he gets the third... 7 or 8 minutes from the end, and up until then, Barcelona had scored twice, one penalty and one header from a free kick, which, by the way, apparently he might have been offside, although I'm yet to see the replay on that. So I still don't think Barcelona look quite at their best, but of course they were pretty comfortable.
All right. Sid, I think we'll probably leave you there with your train travel. Thanks, Sid.
I was very impressed with your technique through there. I went to see the film Gravity last night, which is...
Well, I haven't seen it. No spoilers.
No spoilers, but there is a certain amount of one-way communication that goes on over radio. And it's the calmness and the ability to continue talking when you don't know that anybody is listening.
Right.
That marks out
Well, you see, that's pretty much a trademark, keeping on talking when you don't know if anyone's listening, of this podcast. but thanks. Thanks for that, Paul.
It's okay.
Do you think I could work at Houston?
I think you could work up in space.
Hey! Big game coming up this weekend in Italy, where Juventus take on Napoli. Now, the thing is that, of course, Roma's winning run ended last weekend when they only drew away to Torino, which meant that Juve and Napoli are now just 3 points behind them.
They were very flat, weren't they, Roma? Very flat indeed.
Well, they've been without key players, and they managed to get by without it. But, yeah, they got caught out a little bit by Torino. At the end of the day, they went 10 games, 10 straight victories, and they're top of the league. So it's not that bad for a side that wasn't expected to do anything like this. But, you know, now they're maybe in the sights of Juve and Napoli, who are considered more bona fide contenders. But Juve and Napoli face each other at the Juventus Arena. Obviously, it's a massive north-south derby thing as well. And that's going to be a huge game. That's, as it happens, going to be Sunday night on BT Sport. Hey, before we finish off this part, it's not Champions League, but it is international. Ireland, Barry, you must be excited with, as Toon Toon points out, two failed Sunderland managers taking over your nation. Should be a laugh, says Toon Toon.
Well, I think it's unfair to call Roy Keane a failed Sunderland manager, for a start, because he marched them from the bottom of the Championship out into the Premier League as champions. So that's rather harsh. But yeah, I'm really excited about it. I don't know how this dynamic is going to work, because neither of them are sort of hands-on trainers. They're both sort of from the... Well, they both learnt it at the knee of Brian Clough, and who used to famously turn up on a Thursday afternoon. I think that was the only time during the week he got involved, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I think Keane and O'Neill were pretty similar. So they will have the nicest, best, most technologically advanced training cones, footballs, those sticks you stick in the ground to run in and around like a dog. Yeah, it should be very, very entertaining.
But the number two, in international terms, what do they actually do? Are they there to act as a kind of conduit between the kind of rather scary manager and the players?
Well, that's the concern, isn't it?
Are they the good cop to the bad cop? In which case, shouldn't it be the other way around?
Well, we've got two bad cops, really, haven't we? Because Martin O'Neill doesn't always strike you as the most touchy-feely of managers, and Roy Keane definitely isn't touchy-feely. Not twice. You wouldn't do that twice.
Right.
Not unless he was drugged and tied up. But that's not something I've ever thought about. But the point being that there doesn't seem to be that silk and steel. It's all steel. It's just going to be hilarious. It's going to be really, really entertaining to watch. It's either going to work brilliantly or it's going to work terribly. There will be no middle ground.
On the working brilliantly side, one of the things when you are an international coach is you don't spend any time with these players, so you need to have an immediate impact. If you've got two very forceful personalities, it might be the way of being able to gee them up and get them focused quite quickly.
Right.
And given recent records in the transfer market, that's another avenue shut down, which is probably going to be a bonus.
Right, yeah.
Neither O'Neill or Keane have had a lot of success there recently.
Although we are talking about the Republic of Ireland here, so they are in the transfer market looking for grandmothers and the like.
Right. Well, time has run away from us a little bit, Ian. How about that? Still plenty to talk about from the Premier League, if you're of a mind. My attention's been caught by this Spurs-Newcastle fixture. Who are Newcastle? Who are Spurs, for that matter? Who?
That's a very good question. Probably the answer is a bit dull.
Really? Spurs, yeah?
On both sides, I think. You know, it's
Newcastle
like,
aren't dull, surely.
But when they play effectively, they are a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, if you've got Hatem Ben Arfa going off and doing his magic and running wild and free them, it's exciting to watch, but it's less likely to achieve the results thereafter. But they played very disciplined against Chelsea on Saturday. They, like Arsenal, against Dortmund, didn't really try to attack for the majority of the game. And then opened up at the end and
pow.
Yeah, pow. Partly exactly. Because Chelsea played so badly.
Right. I'm saying back Newcastle here. Because Spurs are in the Europa League.
But haven't Spurs done all right post-Europa League so far?
No.
No?
No, they lost to West Ham. And then another result, which I can't remember at the moment. But anyway, they're playing Sheriff Tiraspol, which gives you a good opportunity for making comments about Sheriff with his Spurs.
Ah.
Yeah?
I'm not going near them.
Don't do that, okay.
Andre Villas-Boas was in quite spiky form at his press conference, having a go at people trying to make a name for themselves by criticising his medical staff for allowing Hugo Lloris to play on after being knocked out last Sunday, which I thought was kind of strange. His argument seems to be that because these people saved the life of Fabrice Muamba, they are incapable of making an incorrect decision.
Mm.
Which is not the case.
Flawed logic, I'd call that.
Yeah, and they deserve and got huge credit and respect for what they did for Muamba. But my own personal opinion is that if an athlete in any sport has been knocked out, they should not be allowed to continue. It just makes no sense at all.
Mm. Mm.
I do agree, but I can't help thinking this is a story that's kind of swollen to fit a very, very quiet news day, because I don't remember this about Lukaku when
I think the reason it's swollen so much is that the kind of prevalent notion for years is that if somebody gets up from an injury and says they want to play on, it's kind of John Terry-esque and battling spirit and should be applauded. But the rest of the world has kind of moved on from this, unbeknownst to us. And so the reason it's such a big story is that everybody else is saying, hang on a second, there's a real danger. Not only that you don't know if a player's concussed, but also that if you leave him out there, he might pick up a second concussion, because he's, after all, a goalkeeper. And that really is potentially fatal.
I do agree, but at the same time, Villas-Boas seems to have been attacked on all sides for what was essentially backing his player and backing his medical staff. You know, he's on the touchline. Yes, there is an argument that he should take no risk whatsoever.
Well,
he's
no, it's
got
not
Brad
an
Friedel.
Argument. It's not there is an argument. It's kind of a fact. That's the thing that I wasn't aware of this, but it does seem to be pretty much an accepted medical viewpoint that you can't go, oh, good for you, you battle on then. there is a real danger that football has been largely ignorant of for too long. So I think that's why it's been about such
a
big
story. To be fair, it's not just football. It's most sports, to be honest,
right.
Apart from, say, boxing. And there have been, obviously, fatalities in boxing. And
yeah.
I mean, rugby has a very cavalier attitude towards it. And considering the size and bulk of the men who play it and what, you know, they do, they clatter into each other at high speed. Rugby's disregard for the seriousness of head injuries is astonishing.
And just to back up Ian, though, I don't think there is much love for AVB in the British press corps. I don't think there ever has been. And I think one of the reasons why this is still going four days after the match is partly because of that.
You think there is something personal?
Well,
there?
Yeah, you could well be right. A lot of people. Well, it goes back to the Harry Redknapp thing. Harry has a lot of mates in the press corps, and they were not impressed when AVB replaced him at Spurs. I personally have no axe to grind with AVB. I think he's a great manager.
Yeah, fair enough. Elsewhere, Southampton are playing Hull. Southampton haven't lost since August in the Premier League. Don't expect that to change this weekend, do you?
No, but Hull continue to perform very well.
Mm.
So I wouldn't... A sneaky point.
Sneaky point, perhaps. A lot of sides out there. Pretty much everybody in the bottom half of the table with relegation worries, potentially. Amongst them, Villa and Cardiff. Hey, four games without a goal now for Villa. That means they've dropped down to 14th place, just three off safety.
Paul Lambert seems very upbeat despite that, though. Before the West Ham game, he was saying how well his team were doing and that he's a great bunch of lads and they're just starting on this exciting project and there's no need for the fans to worry. But, yeah, games without a goal is a concern. Cardiff will obviously be high in the hog after their win against Swansea, and they've gone 4.5 days without anything ludicrous appearing to have happened behind the scenes at the club.
All right, thumbs up.
Quite an achievement in the current climate.
Stats suggest that Cardiff have actually conceded fewer goals on the road than either of the Manchester teams, so that's impressive. Liverpool play Fulham. The exciting news here is that Sacha Rita is out. He got banned for 3 games for that. A horrible stamp on poor old teen whiz kid Yanosai. So that's good. Yeah. Other games this weekend include Swansea Stoke. Swansea are in Russia this evening. And Mitru's out for a month.
Is he?
Yeah, apparently. Ooh. So.
Pourquoi?
I don't know. He's out anyway.
Yeah. Gone to the pub,
Crystal,
injured.
One of those. Crystal, perhaps you got a Eurostar.
Yeah.
Crystal Palace are hosting Everton. Hey, Martinez does defence. Who knew?
With a clean sheet.
Yeah, he's, you know, they don't concede at all. They're really tight. They play decent football. They've got that alchemy going, haven't they?
Well, yeah, they do. That's true. They do. They do. And I but think you can't look any further than away win in that game.
Right. Okay. It could go as high as third. Palace have had 7 defeats in a row. Midfielder Adlin Gidura is ruled out for at least 6 weeks with a punctured lung and 2 broken ribs. How do you get that, Barry?
He clattered into West Brom goalkeeper Bowes Myhill in Crystal Palace's most recent defeat.
Ah. And in other Crystal Palace news, they're now talking, is this right, about Aitor Karanka becoming... Yeah?
Yeah, that's what he's one of the rumours.
And what is there any kind of tie in there that I'm unaware of?
Maybe
is he a former Palace player or anything?
No, he's not. I think it's that, you know, everybody wants a Pochettino.
Okay.
So you try and get a late 30 something continental.
Bingo.
Notts County haven't. They've gone for Sean Derry.
Lovely. Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
He's a nice chap, Sean Derry, didn't know.
Yeah, a nice chap and a great pro. And they've Notts County appointed him. He used to play for them. He's never had a management job before. And the statement in which they announced they were appointing him wasn't the most ringing endorsement. It was sort of like, well, the potential for disaster here is huge, but we're going to give him a go anyway, and good luck to him. And he's a nice guy.
So did he retire from QPR at the end of last season then or something?
No, he's still a QPR player. I think he's on loan somewhere else.
On loan to Millwall, I think.
Right, but he's with immediate effect going to be player manager at Notts County. And I like the idea of a player manager. There aren't too many of them around anymore.
Right.
In fact, will he be the only one in the league? I don't know.
I can't think of another.
Bet listeners can.
Oh, I'm sure they
listeners.
Will, yeah.
Huh. Do you know the game we haven't talked about yet? We haven't talked about it yet, but we're going to.
It's not really... Yeah, I know what it is.
Let's finish off with a bang, with the cymbal crash that is Norwich West Ham.
Yeah, that might just be a...
Duke de Blanges says, Norwich mustn't fire Houghton till Tony Pulis has found a job somewhere. He's like the bogeyman in a children's cautionary tale. Don't fire your manager or Tony Pulis will come and get you.
That's superb.
What do you think? It's a huge game for both. I mean, Norwich are in the bottom three, but West Ham are only 2 points better off, so... Whew.
Yeah, I was privileged enough to see the corresponding fixture last season, which was the most dire 0-0 draw I've ever seen. And
right.
It's not... I saw Bolton Southampton many years, but anyway, there was lots of ball, lots of putting snow on it, lots of cowardly... but physically brave play, but cowardly tactical play. And I think it's going to be very difficult. Norwich have had a lot of games now over this past year and our terrible run in calendar year of 2013, where we've had big games and we've come, let's summon up the juices and go out there and thrash the opposition. And every game like that has ended up being a nervous stagger over the line, and I can't say anything different.
It does set up that way, doesn't it? When you look at West Ham's form away, they've only conceded one goal in their last away, 5 away games, so it's very much shut up shop. And as for Norwich and their shooting, well, we've all seen the stats, I'm sure, about Ricky van Wolfswinkel, who hasn't mustered a single shot on goal in his last 6 games.
He was actually getting into some kind of form before he got injured, though.
Oh.
And I think Cooper, you know, he might take a little bit more time too, but I don't know that we know how to get the best out of those guys anymore.
Are you going to go to that game?
Well, I had a conversation with my brother about it because it's his turn and he was trying to get through his share season tickets, and he was kind of like, do you want to come with me? Do you want to come with me? And I was like, it's on telly. Do you know what? I just might watch it. And he goes, do you know what? That's what I'm going to go to. So it's like everybody's just abnegated responsibility straight away. Fortunately, there's a Norwich-based contingent who will fill our seats, but...
Like, West Ham have recently taken to playing without strikers, and Norwich have taken to playing without defenders. So, I don't know, is that going to make for a really entertaining game or a really dull game?
The latter.
Right. Hey.
That Ricky van Wolfswinkel stat is astonishing, actually. Like, surely, say if one of us was playing up front for Norwich in 6 games, we would surely muster one shot on target.
Mm. Are the fans calling for Chris's head?
Oh, they have been for ages.
Oh, really?
He's run out of patience, hasn't he? Because he marginalised and then got rid of Grant Holt and he played one striker instead of 2 strikers. The goals per game, I think, dropped beneath 1 a game. And you can't do that and not get results and hope to survive, unfortunately, because he's a lovely man.
Yeah, Spurs are scoring less than a goal a game.
They are. Yeah. They just keep getting clogged up in the final third, which is understandable given there's so many new players.
That's true, I suppose. That's true. That's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. Many thanks to producer Ben and Ian McIntosh and Paul McKinney's and Barry Glendenning and you, listener, and you. We'll be back on Monday with a reaction to all of the weekend's activities. I'll be doing a Bijou paper review on Friday. And hopefully, amidst all of that, you'll have yourself a super weekend. Bye for now.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag-and-drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.